Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. I'm glad to have you with us here today. I've got a little bit of a different podcast for you today, and I think you're going to like it. A lot of you, I think, listening can relate to this. I grew up as a kid going to some really neat camps, Christian camps all over the Northeast, and they just had a really great impact on my life. And I hear from people all the time how, you know, different Christian camps help them to grow and things like that. And so I'm grateful for the Christian camps across the country, but there's some issues they've been running into because of other dynamics going on in society. And so we're going to talk about that today. My guest today is Nick Doty, who is the camp director for Deerfoot Lodge in North Carolina. So welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Hey, Dr. Knapp, or as I know you, Kenyon, from back in our camping days together. Great to be here.
Great. Well, glad to have you. Could you give the listeners a little bit of your background as far as, you know, your life and growing up and maybe what led you to work at a Christian camp?
I'd be honored to. Like you, I grew up going to a camp. I actually was a camper at Deerfoot Lodge in New York. We have another camp in New York, and I was a little camper there. Started going there when I was 9. Just fell in love with that place. Just being able to be free and in the woods and then in that, meet that general revelation. It's where the Lord revealed himself to me, really, and where I came to know the Lord was at Deerfoot Lodge. I just wanted to be there all the time. So when I was at school, I was just yearning to get back to camp. And then when I went to college, I worked at Deerfoot every summer. But the Army paid for my school, so I had to pay them back. I was an ROTC scholarship. So then I went and did 20 years in the United States Army, where I got to serve in a very interesting time with some really great people. And then just the same year that I was retiring from the Army in 2017, Deerfoot was starting its first second camp in North Carolina. And I say this all the time, it's like the Lord had something to do with it. And I was hired as the director of Deerfoot Lodge Blue Ridge, our camp in North Carolina, in 2017. Camp opened in 2019, and then I've been the director there ever since. And it's been a blessing for me and my family that we get to serve in this way.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of listeners can relate to camps and stuff. I'm sure they all grew up going to, you know, boys and girls camps all over the country and things like that. But Deerfoot's a little different than your average boys and girls camp. Could you maybe give the listeners a little description of what Deerfoot is and maybe their webpage?
Sure. Yeah. So Deerfoot would say it's different. I think I've met every camp director in the country and they would all say their camp is different. We all have our uniquenesses and our distinctives. Deerfoot's distinctive is definitely in how we kind of present the gospel through relationship. We're not an amusement camp. We're not a camp where kids just go and it's all fun. We're a camp that embraces challenge and that embraces some managed risk and introducing campers to risk. That's really important at a younger age that they get a little their feet wet in that area. And then we do that through, of course, the gospel. And how we do that is through relationships, that the staff we hire is so important. That camper looks up and see these two, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old guys that are relating in a way they've never seen in this context of a Christian community. And from that, they get curious and start seeing that, oh, well, it's Jesus. That's why these guys interact different. And that's why it feels different here. So that's definitely our really distinctive. We really, Deerfoot's program, you know, started in 1930, and it's relatively unchanged since. I think in the 1980s and 90s, camps went through a little bit of a revolution where they went from that older model to more of an amusement model, where it's a place where campers could go and have fun and just have a blast. And they started putting blobs on the lake and bringing go-karts and paintball guns and just like anything. And some campers love that. And that's great for some campers. That's a great program. There's a lot of great camps that operate that way. But Deerfoot has really stuck to this. A boy in the woods with, you know, a pocket knife and some matches, and that's all they need, and that's the program. So that's what Deerfoot's kind of tried and trueness is. And we're at deerfoot.org, and we are a not-for-profit. So www.deerfoot.org, and then there's a link there to both the Adirondack site and the North Carolina site. We say we are one camp in two locations, so it really is the same camp. We just occupy two places for more opportunities for boys to get out into the woods and meet their maker.
Absolutely. And I'll admit my bias here, folks listening. This is the best camp in America, hands down. I've been to a bunch, and I interview people all the time from different camps and different organizations. And this is really, really outstanding. So their mission, by the way, is building godly men in Christ-centered community through wilderness camping. So, I mean, this isn't some little wimpy kind of camp. They go out and do manly man stuff that really appeal to boys, and hiking and, you know, learning to shoot guns and bows and arrows and all that kind of stuff. Build fires out in the woods and things like that. It's just a lot of fun. But I need to sort of transition here a little bit. I know that in America today, a lot of people talk about the mental health crisis and all that, and all the number of kids that are depressed and suicidal and all this other things like that. And so the American Camp Association and lots of other organizations have really been trying to address mental health stuff at camps, not just with psychologists and, you know, the regular life. And they developed an approach to this called Mental, Emotional, and Social Health, which the acronym is MESH. And I'll use that phrase MESH from the rest of the podcast. So they've got this mental, emotional, and social health, and they're trying to basically apply, it sounds like, some kind of psychological help to kids at camps. So what's that like, Nick, for camps to try to address psychological stuff because of all that's going on in society? Like, because I know you guys touch on psychological, emotional stuff, but that's not your main mission. So how's it been for Christian camps to try to address mesh issues?
This has really been something that's taken off in the past couple of years, the specific, you know, naming it, right? We want to name things out there in mesh. And yeah, I don't know if somebody's got a clock on how far we are into the podcast before the word COVID said, but whoever had that, yeah, this is the mention of it. I think that really moved the needle on everything. You know, there was just, COVID had such wide-ranging impacts far beyond respiratory disease and the mental impact to what we're seeing in campers and young boys at camp. It was just gasoline on the fire. And we've seen such a huge spike in mental health issues coming into camp post-COVID. But there was always some stuff there, right? It wasn't like there wasn't a little fire already going. There was. It was trending in that direction. Go back to maybe, you know, the other big accelerant, which is social media, right? And the advent of people carrying around phones 24/7, and then that phone being connected to social media. And then, you know, the next big jump up was COVID. So, you know, from the iPhone to social media to COVID, it just continues to pour on and pour on. So that's definitely the promulgation. But even when Kenyon, you and I were campers, camp is just a great place where you can take a step back and be quiet and still and put down distractions, even as limited distractions we had. And sometimes, as you know, in those spaces, stuff comes up. Mm-hmm. So camp has been dealing with this for a long time, decades. But just recently, we've really had to step up our game in addressing these issues, because the number of issues aren't just kids that are a little bit stressed out or dealing with some anxiety at school, but serious cases of diagnosed anxiety and real clinical depression. So little camps are found themselves at the forefront of this fight.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. It's everywhere. And if the kids are going to be at camp, then those issues are there too. So I'd say I've got some research in front of me and related to mesh issues and youth depression and anxiety and stuff. And this one article says the current digital age has shifted the focus of youth from interacting physically to engaging remotely. And that sort of goes along with what you said about, you know, during COVID and all that, and school shifted to online and everything else. But following that, though, it goes on to say research has identified stress, anxiety, loneliness, depression, frustration, and emotional regulation issues in our youth and young adults, you know, as a correlated consequence of everything moving to a digital format and being disconnected. And what's really ironic to me is when I was on your website today, you have a quote there where you say, sometimes you need to unplug in order to connect. And I found that so ironic, because sometimes, I'll say it again, sometimes you have to unplug in order to connect. And at Deerfoot, you guys value unplugging and disconnecting from technology, don't you?
We do. Yeah, it's an essential part of the program, is to put down that technology. And I think a lot of camps are there with us, and they see the need for that. And it's why parents look to send their kids to summer camp, is to give them that little break from technology. I'll tell you, Kenyon, what we've seen, though, too, is parents might say, oh, I could never send my kid to camp because they need their phone, or they could never go without their phone.
Uh-huh.
But what we see in campers is that's one of the best things that they're reporting about going to camp, that they get this digital detox and they know the value of it. There's this, I think, you know, false belief out there that kids just want to be on their phone all the time. And we hear that all the time. That's not my experience. That's not true. They don't want to be on their phone all the time. They are, because it's so easy to be, just like you and I, right? Like, I need help getting off my phone. Kids just need help. They don't want to be on their phone all the time. They do want to put it down. So camp is a place that just, it forces that to happen. And they're thankful for it, from my experience.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. This almost seems like a paradox that, you know, you have to disconnect from electronics to really connect, like that quote I just read you from the website. And yet kids today, they're like the most connected generation ever, with all this, you know, Instagram constantly and other, you know, other social media platforms. And they're hyper connected digitally, but the research shows that they're more disconnected emotionally than ever. I mean,
we're also seeing that something I've seen is that connection is like a perishable skill. It's almost like learning a language. If you don't use it, you learn it. You forget it. Like, you don't remember it. It's, you know, connecting, I'm learning. And what I'm seeing at camp, it's not like, you know, swimming or riding a bike. So at all, there's a classic scene on day one of camp, you know, parents are kind of leaving and now campers are milling about and, you know, it's that awkward first day and nobody really knows each other. And I remember one year some campers were throwing a Frisbee around and there's another camper just standing, watching them so intently. And I know this kid was struggling a little bit when his parents left. So I had my eye on him and I kind of come up alongside him and talking to him and say, you know, it looks really fun throwing the Frisbee around. Like, do you want to go join them? And his eyes got really big. He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, just go. Like, if you want to throw the Frisbee, throw the Frisbee. And he gave me a look like I was talking in a different language. He's like, yeah, like, he had no idea, like, how to initiate connection. Mm-hmm. He was just, you know, like a fish out of water. And I was just raise your hand up in the air, walk out there and they'll throw the Frisbee to you. And he shook his head. No, like I was wrong. Like, no, I couldn't do that. Or that's not how you do it. He had never really just naturally entered into play. And I think that's something that's hugely missing, that you and I just grew up with and took for granted, right? We'd come inside, throw the books down, kids would go outside and be out in the neighborhood. And just, there's this natural play would just kind of happen. Well, that was the environment we were in. And when you take that environment away, it doesn't just naturally happen.
Yeah,
we need to create spaces where that can happen again.
Yeah, we didn't have to send them a friend request first online and then they accept us and then we start a relationship or something. Yeah. Or we didn't have to be friends with one of their friends to have a suggested friendship to connect. And yeah, it's crazy how relationships work these days. I tell you what, in this research I'm reading about youth, though, and of course some of this data comes during the height of the COVID, you know, pandemic, so maybe it's a little worse than today, but they said in 2021, the CDC said that about 20% of youth reported seriously contemplating suicide. It doesn't mean they actually attempted, but they were thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then in the general population that same year, 18.1% of the adult population and 25% of 13 to 18-year-olds said that they regularly struggle with anxiety. So that just seems like it's just more common in society today than I'd say that it was when we were kids. So I guess my question for you is, I mean, you work with youth all the time. What mesh issues have you or maybe other leadership at Deerfoot seen among campers and staff? Like, and it doesn't have to be at Deerfoot, but like, what are you seeing among youth today?
Yeah, the kind of the whole lexicon has shifted. Whereas a few years ago, we might have, you know, a camper or a staff, right? Because it's very prominent, you know, present in staff as well. Would come in and say something like, you know, I have a really tough semester, you know, when I get back to school after camp, I'm going to be taking 21 credits and I'm going to be seeing my girlfriend again, who just broke up with me. And I'm going to kind of run in the same social circle. So that's going to be awkward. And, you know, I'm not sure how I'm going to pay for school. And, you know, this is going to be really hard is kind of what they say. And, you know, can you pray for me about that? Or can you help me with that? Nowadays, they'd start off the conversation saying, I have anxiety and depression. I say, well, tell me about that. Uh-huh. And they launch into that exact same example. So then I'm sitting here, you know, not sure what to say. Do I just encourage them to kind of rub some dirt on it and be like, man, I think that's just life. You're carrying 21 credits. You just broke up with your girlfriend. Yeah, that's just, I understand that's hard. But I don't know if that's anxiety and depression. But of course, maybe it is deeper, right? Maybe there is something there. So I don't just want to flippantly tell them, rub some dirt on it. You're fine. That's just life. Mm-hmm. So as you know, people, these kind of paramedic mesh providers, right? I'm not a mental health professional, but I am kind of on the front lines. You know, I've taken upon myself to try to get schooling. I know other people who have that kind of thrust to this. So maybe we can do some more mental health triage. But I see that in staff. I see that with campers who are very quick, you know, 10-year-old campers, you know, self-identifying that they have anxiety and depression and that they struggle with thoughts of self-harm. And that's not my language. That's literally their language. Like they will say it verbatim like that. Like I have anxiety and depression and sometimes I struggle with thoughts of self-harm. Yeah. 10-year-olds say that. So it's definitely out there and it's changed the whole way we look at it. Yeah. And how we have to try to deal with it, arming these then 19 and 20-year-old counselors to come alongside them in that situation.
Yeah. You know, Nick, it's really good for you to be saying this because the listeners of this podcast are, you know, mainly, you know, mental health professionals, psychologists, counselors, social workers, all that. And then a lot of, you know, undergrad and graduate students. And it's funny that a lot of the way we do our professions are different from the way the young kids today talk about it. Like we have all this focus on like client confidentiality and like not identifying them and all this, which is, you know, good. You know, you don't want to like out your clients per se if they you're seeing you for therapy or something unless they want to. But it's like what you're saying, kids today, they wear their diagnosis like a badge. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago, I was in Walmart doing some grocery shopping and I had this client come running up to me at the other end of the aisle and goes, "Hey, Ken, how's it going? Looking forward to seeing you for therapy on Tuesday," or and all this. And I'm like, okay. You know, I'm like trying to like be confidential and they just like tell the whole world all their business. But that's like a shift in society today, isn't it?
It is. Certainly, going to therapy is not anything to be ashamed of. Anything, it's a badge kind of honor. One, it's not just a badge of honor to go. It is to admit it, right? And then people really look at that as courageous, which, look, I think that's a great thing, you know, that we're talking about these topics and that they campers and counselors and our youth feel much more comfortable talking and sharing about that they're going into therapy. And then when somebody does disclose that, others look at that not as a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength that they've shared that.
Yeah. Or authenticity too.
There's a
too.
Wide range in there. What's that?
I said or authenticity as well. Like when they share that, people feel like they're being very authentic right. And real, and which is what that generation craves is authenticity.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's, I'm sure it's impactful for the mental health professionals when they get somebody in, like, is this somebody that kind of wants to just do a self-assessment check, just kind of go to therapy to say, I think there is a lot of searching, like to hear it's pervasive through their social media feeds and they wonder, should I be in therapy? So I think there is some searching and when they go to camp and they hear all these or a school and they hear people talking about their anxiety, depression, they kind of squint at that a little bit and say, wait, do I have that? So I'm sure it's a challenge for the mental health field to, when they get youth in, to try to do an assessment of how serious is this? Because I think like I express my concern, you know, one of my biggest fears is somebody comes to me with a mental health concern and I just blow it off. Like, you think you have anxiety, but you really don't. So again, my triage abilities are what I try to really heighten and sense, like, how serious is this? And, you know, am I way out of my depth here? And do I need to recommend this person to someone like you or your peers in the mental health world?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting, too, in the research I'm reading about mesh training and mesh support, they use a lot of the same technology we use here at graduate level for mental health fields. Mm-hmm. Like I'm looking at this article right now and it talks about like counselors at camp and you deal with, you know, dozens and dozens of those every summer. It says that they have potential mesh impacts on them, such as secondary traumatic stress, vicarious trauma or compassion fatigue, burnout. And they say all of this happens because you care for people. And see, the thing is, like, I'm used to hearing that applied to like, you know, like I take students with me to like, you know, India and Haiti and, you know, these third world countries where people are dying of starvation and stuff like that. But yet this camping association is using those same terms for camp counselors. So I guess I'll pose the question to you. I mean, they're saying this. Are you seeing, and I'm not trying to make you a psychologist, but are you seeing what you think is secondary traumatic stress and vicarious trauma and things like that in your counselors, but based on the work they do, or is that an exaggeration on the part of the camping association?
Not an exaggeration at all. It's something that I actually have to guard my staff against. And, you know, it's important. What I've learned from this as a director is it's so important to know your staff, because I certainly have guys, and there are a few coming to mind right now, that they know and I know they're more susceptible to it. Like the way the Holy Spirit works in them is a little bit different, and it touches a different part of them. They have different gifts, and part of that gifts is they feel a lot. So I spend a little bit, maybe some more time with them just to check in to see how they're doing. And then especially if they have a specifically tough cabin or a tough camper that's really struggling, and for them to watch that, it's something I definitely keep my pulse on throughout the summer. Because if it catches on and it kind of goes undiagnosed, man, it'll show up big time. That counselor will just get instantly fatigued. Like, it just sets on so quickly. A counselor that's really kind of going through some of that, like, vicarious trauma and that kind of secondary PTSD, along with a camper that's really struggling. Like, they want to feel so deeply. And it's hard to manage, right, Kenny? Because you know that's such a big part of our program. Like, the counselor connecting with the camper. When we started the podcast, I said, Deerfoot, big thing is relationship. Like, I push the counselor to really get to know their camper on a deep level. And that's the strength of Deerfoot, is that there's a connection there, and that these campers can be, you know, we try to be like Jesus, right? That they're fully known and fully loved. You know, we can't ever fully love them like Jesus did. We can't ever fully know them like Christ did, but that's our goal. And in that, there's a lot of room to get hurt. So I think specifically Christian camps need to be on guard for that, because not only are you dealing with just the traumas that some campers are bringing in, but then you throw the gospel on top of that, and you can take on this burden like it's on you to represent Christ, and so you carry an extra burden on top of yourself. So I think Christian camps and some of the people who are listening, the mental health professionals that you know Christ, and they know that we carry a little extra burden and how we deal with that. And that is, you know, hopefully we pass it to Him, that we know His yoke is easy and His burden is light. It's not gone, right? It's not missing. It's easy and light. So we try to remind our counselors of that.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously caring is one of our highest things. I mean, you know, loving other people is being like Christ. So that's our highest aspiration. So I guess these side effects of loving people are real, and I'm hearing from you that you're definitely seeing it. So that's good confirmation of what this article says. So I guess the next logical phase then is, if this is happening, if compassion fatigue and burnout and all that are potential challenges we run into, we got to prepare people at camps to handle these things. I know there's lots of ways we can approach this. And in full disclosure, people, I do a little bit of work with this camp, Deerfoot myself, with helping them with some mesh training. But I'm learning in this whole process, and Nick and the other leadership there are helping me figure it out. I volunteer and go to this camp every summer, and we just started recently, last year. But I'm thinking, Nick, you know, other camps around the country could possibly use people like me helping them out as well, because I'm sure among the listeners there's people who, you know, love XYZ camp somewhere, and they might need some mesh support help as well. Do you anticipate there's other Christian camps around the country in the same boat as you guys?
If there's a Christian camp listening to this podcast, or even a non-Christian camp listening to this podcast, and they don't already have a mental health professional that they're consulting with regularly, they're behind the ball. Yeah, that would be, as soon as they're done listening to this, if I were them, I would start looking for that help, because you need professional help for this. And, you know, I'll do some shout outs, you know, American Camping Association, 3CA, Christian Camps and Conferencing Association. Here in North Carolina, we have the North Carolina Youth Camps Association. Like, they're leading, you know, they're these organizations that we're a part of, and part of for a reason, because they're providing some really good resources. So from the top down, camps, there's a lot of support out there. And most camps are a part of one of those, you know, multi-tiered, anywhere from the national to state to local level organization. I mean, support is available there. Deerfoot teamed with a group called Sacred Playgrounds, which is a data kind of research survey form that helped us collect data on the mental health of our campers and staff and even parents and their concerns this past year. And they have some really good data, and you can contact them at, you can just Google Sacred Playgrounds. Jake Dorenson was a big help with that. So there's great resources out there. In this past year, you know, every year, the American Camping Association, we have to kind of resubmit for our accreditation. And this year, the amount of questions they were asking, like making sure that we're taking care of our people, both campers and staff, on what we're doing to provide mesh support. They're really interested in that. So if you're not accredited through ACA, know that the national level organizations are really concerned that camps are taking this seriously and they're putting steps in place to care for their people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll do another shout out to the Alliance for Camp Health, which was formerly the Association for Camp Nursing.
Oh, yes.
Also has a lot of good articles about this. And so yeah, there's a lot of good places, like Nick mentioned, out there for you all to check this out and learn more about mesh support. And you know what's interesting, too, in this article I read, I'll read you a quote, and I think it's sort of ironic or funny again. They say, research asserts that individuals who have a hope-filled approach to life have fewer mesh issues. And I just sat here and said to myself, good Lord, I mean, this just rings like Romans chapter 5 all over the place to me. In Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4 say, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And of course, they just said here in their research, a hope-filled approach to life, people have less mesh issues. And so, I mean, it's a Christian worldview is a great resource. It's a great coping mechanism for dealing with mesh issues that kids have and you know, challenges that we have in our own lives. So they go on to say in the article that when camp staff work with, you know, either the staff themselves or campers, they say all interactions at camp need to orient us in safety, love, and respect. If your camp has nighttime chats, use this time to elevate discussions that promote the uniqueness of individuals in a safe space. And I'm sitting here going like, oh my goodness, this sounds like Galatians 5:22 about the fruits of the Spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Like, that's what they're wanting at these places. And you know, I just suggest to listeners, you know, the fruits of the Spirit make you therapeutic. They really do. And like, it's basically being mimicked by these, you know, secular camping associations. So I'll stop preaching. I need to interview you, but
no, I will respond to that because, you know, I think specifically Christian camps are really poised to address this well. But I think there's also blind spots that we might have too in the Christian world, where there's a great book called Sacred Wounds that talks about, you know, that the hurt that the church can do. And in the introductory of that book is the story, the author is telling a story about when they went to camp and the gospel was shared to them in a very clumsy way, that they felt pressured and they didn't feel like camp was a safe place where they could express some doubts. Mm-hmm. So as we talk about making these safe places and as Christian camps, we have to be honest with ourselves and say, look, we have to be okay with our camp also being a safe place for campers to come and express maybe their doubts with Christianity or things they're struggling with, or knowing that they're at this camp where everybody's these professed happy, you know, believers, and they're not that happy in their faith right then and there, that they're going through a little bit of a Job moment and they're shaking their fist at God a little bit. And, you know, I'd ask, you know, is your camp a safe place for that, where a camper can come and feel like they can kind of somewhat go against the grain where everybody's singing and happy and fully believing, and they might have some doubts. And I'd challenge camps to make sure that they create that space to know that they're still loved through that, and that Christ loves them and can handle any question they have. And we, you and I, and the camp directors and counselors, we won't have all the answers, but you know, there's some honesty. And like we said, that authenticity to admit that we don't have all the answers and to say that's okay. And they can take that to Christ.
Absolutely. You know, I see sometimes too, like when I just quote a verse like that from Galatians 5:22, sometimes instead of, you know, trying to have those fruits of the Spirit, people read that and then feel guilty that they think, you know, oh, I'm not measuring up to this or something like that. And instead of pursuing it and making it a coping mechanism, rather than that, they sometimes shame themselves with Scripture. And when they do that, you know, scripture can be unhelpful rather than helpful. So when we really live out scripture in relationships like you're talking about, we become therapeutic. But when we shame ourselves with scripture, it's unhelpful.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I tell you what, I want to respect your time and the time of our listeners. We are getting to that point. But before I wrap it up, I always say to guests on the program here, you know, I sort of have my agenda and questions for you, but sometimes there's points you wanted to make about things that we talked about.
Yeah.
So are there any final thoughts you wanted to share about, you know, mesh support for Christian camps or anything else for the listeners you might think would be helpful?
Yeah, the approach, I think, with whether you're a professional mental health provider, you know, remembering why you wanted to get into this field, and camps as they look at their approach to this, parents that might be concerned about how their son or daughter's camp is handling these issues. I kind of look at it the same way I think of our approach to like abuse prevention, where if a parent asks me how I'm going to keep their camper safe at camp, I'll go through FBI background checks and, you know, sex offender registries and all these things we do. But really the best thing we do is we do 3 weeks of pre-camp with our staff, where we really just get to know them at a deep level. Yes, we're training them for both mental health issues and abuse prevention issues and how to paddle a canoe, right? And everything in between. But we're really just getting to know them. And whether you're a parent trying to deal with a child who might be struggling with a mental health issue or a care provider that can't get through, I think, you know, besides all of the, you know, getting formal mental health procedures in place is super important and you need those, but you have to go down to what's at the base of all this, which is your really care for God's people, wanting to support in the best response is to just try to get to know them and love them where they are. And that's what we try to do with our staff. That's what we try to get our staff to do with our campers. And I think that's at the base of it. You know, I do have one kind of somewhat separate point that I wanted to say too.
Please.
And that is just, you know, the fact that Deerfoot is a wilderness camp. And as we know from general revelation, like something just happens there. You know, youth leaders, I think, sometimes are a little, you know, jealous of the work we can do at summer camps, which are a parachurch. Like, we're not the church. We're not trying to be the church. The church is important to serve a good role. But we just have the benefit of getting campers away and out in creation. We're just something, you know, the Holy Spirit sometimes gets a little bit more miles to the gallon there. So we get to use that space. And it's great.
Absolutely.
But, you know, what, yeah, we, it, yeah, go ahead. If you want to.
I'm just amening to everything you're saying. And I tell the listeners, I started at this camp, you know, 40 years ago when I was 14 years old. And it's had an amazing impact on my life. And once again, it's deerfoot.org, D-E-E-R, I'm sorry, two D's, two E's, D-E-E-R-F-O-O-T.org. And it's the best Christian boys camp in the country. And so, you know, it's definitely very helpful. And listeners, please do like Nick said, and, you know, think about providing mesh support for some good Christian camp that you're familiar with. You know, there's a lot of good you can do. But
Something just happens. I did remember what I was going with that thought, which was something happens when you know, children especially get out into the wilderness. There's a great book, you know, The Last Child Alone in the Woods, which talks about the benefits of just getting outside and being outside. You know, we're seeing this encroachment more and more of one thing people can do of the encroachment into summer, right? Every school district across the country seems to be cutting. Here in North Carolina, it's a big fight that we have where school districts are just wanting more of the family's time, wanting more of the children's time to keep them in a classroom more, you know, deeper into the summer. They're starting, you know, school earlier and ending later. And I just believe that that's not what our children need right now, especially coming out of COVID. They need more summer, not less. So if you're in a fight there in your local town to this mental health, I think goes hand in glove with that, is to reach out and let your school boards know that kids need more summer, not less.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time today, Nick. I really appreciate it. And God bless you with your work there at Deerfoot Lodge.
We appreciate that. We need your prayers. That's what fuels us.
Absolutely. So listeners, take this as a challenge. You know, you can help with mesh support at Christian camps all across America. I mean, Deerfoot Lodge is this great boys camp we've been talking about today and how, you know, we're trying to do mesh support there. But you have a role as well all across the country. So this is a challenge today for you. And once again, thanks, Nick. And thanks for joining me on the podcast. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today, and we'll look forward to having you with us next time. God bless you. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.